This is Dr. Robert Dillon, the host of the Help Me Understand podcast. This podcast was designed to create space, the space that we need to think, listen, reflect, and laugh. It features educators, designers, thinkers, and solution makers from all walks of life. Take a moment to fill your ears with some ideas and thoughts that can make your day just a little bit better. Have you been wondering what it's like to be a principal of a school these days? Well, you're in luck. Today's guest is Doug Timm. Doug is a principal of an elementary school in the Colonial School District in Delaware. Doug and I talk about the challenges of reopening school, how he has worked to connect with his families throughout this pandemic, and how he has worked closely with his teachers to make reopening possible. Sit back and enjoy this great conversation with Doug and I as we laugh and think and talk about what has been such a difficult year for schools. Doug, it's great to have you here.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here, Bob. It's been a long time. We were just catching up a minute ago.
It was. Before the podcast, I was trying to remember. I still come across a couple of pictures of the school when I visited a number of years ago now. I believe your school was the one that had the Discover Card room that had pink and blue, whatever became of that space. Do you remember that space?
Yeah, I do. That's actually, you know what was funny? We were on a tour. I took you to that school because of that space, but that wasn't my school. But it was a very interesting space. That's actually a school down the street, but it's growing. My school is much smaller than that school, but we made a lot of improvements and got a lot of places as far as learning spaces are concerned. But
yeah,
so, no, that was a good 5 years ago. So I'm glad to finally catch up again.
So for people that are listening, what school are you at and how long have you been there?
Yeah, I'm at Cary Downey Elementary School. I am on my 8th year. It's in Newcastle, Delaware. Really, you know, just awesome school of about 400 students each year, about 40 staff members. You know, just a great group of people that I work with. Definitely center on community, you know, our use of technology, and just trying to do the best for our kids really every single day. Definitely been a challenge this year and last March, but I know we're probably gonna dive into that a little bit. But yeah, I mean, we're always trying to figure out new ways to try to do things and definitely keep it centered around students. I know I've had some conversations this week and the last couple of weeks with some of my leadership team, and it's all about what do those kids need now, which seems to be ever evolving as we were just talking. We just started back this week full time. So
yeah,
that dynamic has definitely changed what we need at this point.
That's good. So how in 8 years, what would you look back and say, man, I've gotten better? Not, you know, being humble, but like still like, you know, what have you gotten better at as a leader over the last 8 years?
I think just seeing an overall global perspective of what's going on and then really trying to use that dynamic to put people in places that they can be successful at. You know, I told you before the show, I've been lucky enough that I've been able to hire close to, I think, 65 or 70% of the people that I'm currently working with to that level. Even like all of our support staff group is almost all brand new. And that's from secretary to nurse to everyone else is, you know, pretty much within less than 3 or 4 years. So kind of being able to work together with people, using what they feel is important, but then also seeing where we were and where we are now and how much we've grown and trying to figure out how those pieces fit together. I like kind of, you know, pushing people to try to, you know, develop their own leadership skills, even if they're not in leadership positions, to put them a part of the decision-making from the ground up. You know, I've found in my years that when I make decisions and then try to force people into them, it may work for a minute, but the overlasting change in atmosphere is not what it needs to be, because at some point I lose steam and then those around me are like, thank goodness he gave it up and we're going to go a different direction. But if they are part of that decision-making process from the very beginning and or it's their idea and they run with it, those sort of changes or little tweaks and things tend to definitely last a little bit longer and are more meaningful for our students.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're at a point where if you move on to a different position, I'm not running you out and I'm not trying to get you a new position, but
I'm not going anywhere.
Left, feel like the school would have the DNA, the culture you want and could kind of do it without you? Because I think it takes a couple years to kind of set the course, get it going. But then the key is, can it sustain after a leader leaves, right?
Yeah. You know what? That idea around that, I've always kind of pushed back a little bit on, and we can maybe dive into that. And I'll say for this reason, if I left and no one replaced me, I think we would go in a regular course, you know, for a little while. If I left and someone came with a completely different vision as far as the leadership, I can't tell you that. I mean, I wouldn't want them to fight against that person. Like maybe their position or their role or what they're thinking, you know, makes sense for where they're at. And maybe they can convince those people. So I wouldn't want to take that away from another leader who jumps into the building that I'm currently running. But yeah, if I just left or disintegrated into nothing or just, you know, took 180 sick days. Yeah, I think the people are committed to what the direction is, because like I said, I think, again, I'm not perfect and it's not something that I do every single time. And sometimes I just have to make decisions and we go with it. But I try as much as possible, especially over the past 10 months of like, cause you just don't know. You don't know what's coming next. So if people aren't at the very beginning of decision-making, at least transparent and letting them know what you're thinking so that they can give you feedback, then everything seems to, or I have a feeling things would have fallen apart where we were able to really keep it together. Yeah, and be there for each other and really be that support that we needed for each other for the past 10 months, because it's been hard. It's been really, really difficult. Yeah.
It has been hard. And I think one of the things that I'm trying to shine a bright light on, and next week I've got a short piece coming out on, is we've been talking a long time, or I've been talking a long time about learning space design. You know it matters. Yep. We know the furnishings matter, where kids learn matter. But, you know, we haven't always said this is the right thing to do because our professionals deserve to be in a workplace mm-hmm. that supports them and lets them be at their best. I think it's worth saying, yes, we should be doing this for kids, but holy cow, workspaces that our schools have been awful for teachers, lighting and air and, you know, just dark. And I think we need to do some of these infrastructure changes to support our teachers sticking around in the workforce and being really good at their profession. I don't know if you see it the same.
Yeah. I'll say in our building in particular, we're lucky. We have a lot of natural light. That's the one thing we are not lacking for. So when it comes to like lighting, a lot of my teachers choose not to turn their lights, their overhead lights on many days, and they don't need to because the outside light is so powerful. So like my office, I never have a light on. I have a huge window that just shines light in there all the time. So to that physical part, yeah, we don't have a whole lot of money to spend on, you know, like the coolest new thing. We've done some things with some of our spaces that have been pretty unique, and I definitely allow teachers pre-COVID, allow teachers a lot of ability to bring things into the classroom that make it theirs, that also as part of the culture of how they feel, and then their kids, you know, either buy into it or are a part of that decision making. You know, for years I've been a big proponent of, you know, when you're working, be comfortable and whatever that might be. It doesn't mean you have to sit at a desk and work on something. You can go somewhere. And then that freedom for kids also enables them and gives them some sense of ownership, even if it does seem silly, that they can perform better. So the physical part, you know, I think we still need some improvement on that. But I think where we are getting to, or where we're trying to get to, is developing a culture of not only growth, but support. And I was took me a little while to get to the point where I realized how important it is to be like a servant leader. You know, I used to often roll my eyes at that idea for a long time. But I truly think that if I can serve those and get them what they need in a support role, that they will then return that investment back to me and our students tenfold. So that's kind of been where I'm at lately, and trying to make sure that those environments, whether it be the smaller teams or my leadership team or the whole school as a whole, you know, they're safe spaces. And actually, I actually did a survey, and our highest marks were on, we feel safe in meetings, being able to express opinions and thoughts and ideas. Now, there were some marks that weren't so great that we're working on, but we won't need to get into those right now.
Throw out the Russian judge, man. Throw out the Russian judge, man. Like, it's amazing how educators like go look at survey data. They'll never look at the stuff that says, hey, this is all wonderful. Their eyes just go, like, who are the two people that said this? And they focus on that. I'm always like, throw out the Russian judge.
I'm going to use that. Throw out the Russian judge. Huh? Oh, yeah. That's interesting. I like that.
You know, a lot of my listeners are non-educators, and I don't know, you know, I know that people are hearing it, but they're not hearing it. And how has this 10 months, year impacted your families that you serve? You talked about serving them, but talk about, like, you know, you don't have to get into details, but really, what have you seen and how is it really impacting them?
A lot. It's impacting them a lot. We have had some of the most, also on top of that, some of the most generous outpouring from not only staff, but the community. Just the other day, and I actually posted this on Twitter, an anonymous $300, a COVID check came in for someone. They said they didn't need it. They got six $50 gift cards and just dropped them off with a thank you letter to me and the school and said, we don't need this money. So take these gift cards and give them to a fail. And it was completely random and anonymous. So those kind of things have happened more than once. We've gotten multiple donations from all sorts of people, as far as gift cards, you know, money, things, but it's really helped a lot of our community. We have, our support group has met, you know, on a pretty semi-regular basis to decide who needs support. Cause I think we also realize that support goes beyond just, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas. So, I don't know, without getting too many details, cause it'll definitely make me tear up. You know, I personally been involved in just moving people. Like, literally, I have a truck and we've moved people. We've helped people pay just to have a place to stay. You know, a portion of my community does struggle quite a bit with finding housing and food and jobs and that sort of thing. So, you know, they have struggled, but I think what we have also maintained, and I'll say, my secretary probably won't hear this podcast, but her and I have committed to showing up to work every day. We're a lot of places, and I've heard countrywide, like, you couldn't go to the school and get support because there was nobody there. Like, we showed up every single day that we were allowed. We certainly took vacations over the summer and that sort of thing, and we were sick and that sort of thing, but we were there. So they knew from 8 to 4, you know, you could show up and Mr. Tim and Mrs. So-and-so will be there, and that we would, you know, get them whatever we could at that point. So I think that sense of just knowing that there's that solid rock of the community, that's to me, my focus used to be technology, technology, technology. Now it's social justice, social justice, social justice. But also on top of all that, it is what is the best for our community and what can we do and how can we serve them best? And that's not just our kids, but our families, the outside community, but also our teachers. Our teachers are a part of that community and they need to feel that level of support. And there's some other things that obviously I'm not going to bring up on a podcast, but where we've just come together quickly, efficiently, and we just have a way of just finding ways to help people. And those are the things, like, right now that mean more than anything. And I think those are the things that if we leave all of this, those would be like those timestamps, at least in my head. And I think with a lot of our staff, they'll say, I remember when this happened. I remember when this happened and how we stepped it up again and again and again. And we never backed down and we didn't ever leave anyone kind of out to dry. So, and if we did, yeah, you know, we didn't try to in any way. So,
yeah, no. And I mean, I think you're right. No one's going to say, man, that was the time where that kid passed the test. People are going to say that was the time where we came together to make sure the family that was in the hotel had internet access. And we had made sure that they had the things they needed. We made sure there was food on the table that night or, you know, whatever that was. And, you know,
and it's been a district-wide thing. I mean, our district right away, we went right to, you know, food drops, bus stops. The buses would drive around, drop off food at the bus stops for those kids. You know, at that point, you know, I know this isn't, but it is kind of the idea of, like, learning spaces. You know, we had a lot of families that couldn't get to the school or different drop-off points for Chromebooks or supplies. So one day I just said, I'm going to follow the bus around that goes to our different communities because I know they're going to come out for food. So I had a bunch of supplies and I was like, all right, who needs notebooks? Who needs crayons? Like, you're all walking up here for food, but what else do you guys need besides just the food? Because we can provide more than that. And we should be able to provide more than that because, you know, I have a budget, I have a school, and these kids would have gotten these things anyway if they came to school. So we got to make sure they have them when they're at home.
Yeah. Back in the spring, I was out delivering Chromebooks. I had my Google Maps work and I had, like, here's my 15 stops. And I had, like, now to the next one, now to the next one. And I was out dropping chargers off and hotspots. Like, you just do it, man. Cause that's what needs to get done. And so, you know, I've always appreciated that. There's just, whether you call it servant leadership or solution maker or getting shit done, man. I don't know. Like, it just, you got to do it, man. So
I didn't know we could cuss on this podcast.
Yeah, apparently we can. So I just broke the wall. So now we can. So, what gives you hope though, man? Cause there's going to be some stuff that, you know, is going to be hard for a while for a lot of people, but we're going to go into a new school year with some things that maybe worked and that you may want to hold on to. What worked?
You know what? A lot worked. And I'll get into that in a second. But what gives me hope is we survived the pandemic. We survived the protests, you know, and I'm going to say George Floyd, but it's more than just him. But that moment definitely was another one of those times where after that happened, that next week, I asked every single staff member, share your thoughts. Every single staff member that next week met with me at some point, not individually, we met in teams, but we all had to kind of, we had to debrief on that. Like, there was no reason why we couldn't debrief. I felt a need to, you have to debrief. You have to share. Like, sometimes you want to say, I'm a good listener, but sometimes you just need to speak what you're feeling right now and be okay that you're in a safe space, like I said, that you can get that out. So that was a big moment. The insurrection that happened just a couple of weeks ago, again, we met, like, as a staff, we said, let's just do a quick breakout rooms and let's talk with some of each other. And, like, how do you feel about this? I mean, there's been so many things that have happened over the past 10, 11 months that what gives me hope is we made it this far. And I'm sitting here talking to you, smiling and saying, you know what? It doesn't matter. Like, what else could happen? I mean, we could build an ark tomorrow if it starts raining. Like, I'm not worried about it, right? We're going to find the wood and the hammers and the nails, and we're going to put the ark together. And we're going to do what we got to do, because we've not only survived it, we've thrived. I mean, we've come up with a lot of things. Like, for example, we had done this before, and this is a small little victory, but we use Schoology as a learning platform, and they have what's called an update section. And what I was able to do is take all the students and put them in one Schoology course. And this is one of these things that it was just an experiment. And what's happened lately is it is organically, the students are just posting artwork. They're posting thoughts. They're posting polls. It is like a Twitter feed. And again, there's been some inappropriateness, and I got to get in there and be Mr. Tim, the principal, and say, and I had to put a couple of kids out for a day, and I met with them, you know, online. And I was like, listen, guys, there's some rules in here. So when you come back, we got to follow those rules. So it hasn't been without hiccups, but it has been an organic, just a place for kids to meet. And I think that is something that I definitely want to continue. How do we do that? Also, how do we find unique ways to recognize kids in different ways? So, you know, I've been doing morning announcements via a green screen every day since April. For a little while, it was in my house. You know, now it's at school. But we try to incorporate, you know, lately I've been trying to recognize kids for their birthdays and other things that come up. I've been recognizing staff and asking students to thank you. So, I mean, that sort of idea about how can we continue to build community through authentic ways that are actually relevant to kids. And I don't mean put a board up and say who got the highest points on a scoring on a math test or a reading test, because that's not authentic to what is important to them. But if they can share the artwork that they did on the weekend in a post and they get 16 likes, I know it kind of is feeding into maybe this idea around social media, and I understand the double-edged sword of that. But for a kid who's able to share that and get the recognition and affirmation from their friends and teachers jump in there and say, oh, great work, blah, blah, blah. You know, I get in there and say stuff. I mean, I think that's meaningful for kids. And that's definitely one thing that I want to continue on. I mean, other things would just be just this idea around what is really important within the standard. You know, we've always known that standards cover like 365 days of, you know, possible content. And we only have so many days in school. We've never been able to cover them all. So I think we've really been able to trim the fat on a lot of things that are important. And I think teachers are realizing what is important for kids to understand and what isn't so important for them to understand. And then also hopefully incorporating some things into the curriculum that we might not historically have done that would really, you know, promote diversity and equity with our kids.
Yeah, let me touch on the first two and then I'll ask you about the third one. Yeah. I do think that there is, like, we've learned that community building is more important than ever, but it's not just going to be like, hey, we're back, now we're in community. I think that, like, we've seen all of these levers that we can pull, and we need to just keep pulling them all. Like you were talking about, man, like the Schoology update thing, whatever it is. Teachers around the country have been doing amazing things to connect with their kids. And I've heard from teacher after teacher, I thought it was going to be hard to connect with my kids. It's not the same, but I was able to do it.
Yeah.
For teachers to get over that hump of like, you know, I can build a connection with kids. And, you know, one of the things I was telling teachers is you have to open yourself up more than ever. If you're online, you have to tell your story. You have to be open about your hobbies. Cause when you're virtual, the first connection comes from kid to teacher. When you're face to face, it comes from, you know, the other way around, like the kid, you know, you're connecting to the kid cause you see him do something or you do that. Right. So, I think that piece is super important. And then, man, I hope that we say like, hey, we've consolidated the hell out of this curriculum. Let's just stick with this and see how it works for multiple years, right? Like schools have trimmed the fat off all that or said, I can't get to all this or, you know, but I hope we stick with that, because we've known that it's been bloated for a long time. But I think the third point I want to ask, because I think, you know, I hear it in a lot of your responses. I'm hearing this piece that introducing to all of our kids what it means to be civic minded, right? And to me, there's that's the issue of justice. And I couch that as certainly a social justice issue and lots to go into there. Economic justice, and we're seeing a K-shaped recovery in the economy and what that means. And then I think a lot of folks talking about environmental justice issues. You know, if you think about, you know, the former governor of Michigan got indicted for the water quality in Flint, Michigan, right? Like that's environmental justice, right? And maybe social justice mixed in. But talk about how you're elevating those things and how you hope to continue to elevate those things with your kids.
Yeah. So absolutely. I also, just because you said it, the first thing, I don't want to leave out multiple examples of how teachers, like I said, I don't want to leave out the fact that teachers have done unique and wonderful things within our school building. So definitely want to put a little emphasis on that as well. But to what you said, you know, I think it starts with self-awareness for kids, you know, going maybe to even like Maslow, what's the highest, you know, being self-aware of who you are and how you fit into the world. Before COVID, pre-COVID, as I refer to it, we started to do morning meetings with kids, and I got a diverse group of staff, and there were teams of five. It was myself leading it, and then three or four other people, depending on who was available, but a diverse group of people who could connect with kids on different levels than I could, because being a white male, I don't connect with all my kids because they're not all white males. My school is about 30-30-30 as far as Latino or Latinx, Black, and then white. And so that being said, we had these morning meetings that were driven by what kids wanted to talk about. So I initially started it with a group of kids, and they came and they met with me, and I asked them, what are some things that are important to you all? And one of the things they wanted to do was to shorten the school year. And I said, well, we don't have the power to do that, so let's scratch that one off the books. But I hear you. The other one was how to make friends. And then the other thing was, why are we different? So those were the two things that I said, okay, well, we can deal with those in morning meeting. Why are we different, and how do we make friends? So let's start with why are we different. Because if we can figure out why we're different, then we can figure out how to make friends better. At least that was my thought. So I brought it to the staff. I met with a group of people. We came up with a lesson plan of kind of like how to go about this. And then I delivered it to this group of kids again by myself, because I wanted to kind of get a raw feel of what they were thinking. And one of the things that came out right away was, you know, they thought terms like, you're a Black girl, were racist. I said, I'm a white male. They said, Mr. Sam, that's racist. I said, no, it's not. I actually am a white male. Look at me. And they're like, no, it's racist. So I immediately was like, okay, we're on to something here, right? There's some learning that needs to take place, because at some point, some of these kids learn you can't say Black or white. You can't say whatever. You can't identify as however you want to identify. So we have a pretty simple plan that, believe it or not, we started like the beginning of February, and knowing how things went, we only went through about one or two. We went about one and a half rounds, and then March 12th came, and we all know what happened then. So I put a halt on that. But I think what we were doing was starting to evolve this idea around, you know, for kids becoming self-aware. And if you become self-aware of who you are and how you fit in, then you can exactly figure out what you can do to contribute to society. You know, as a white male right now who has really gotten myself involved in social justice, I know how I can hopefully help other white people. I'm not gonna help Latino community necessarily, other than be an advocate for them and promote their voices. But I can help other white people because I've learned a lot of things from people of color and those sort of things. So I want to park that learning on to kids. A lot of people say, well, that's political. I'm like, no, that's the world. Like, that's the world we live in. Like, it is our responsibility to disrupt what kids might be hearing outside of school. That is the purpose of school in many ways. Teach reading, teach writing, teach math, science, social studies, but also disrupt the ideas and have a safe space to discuss things that are important to you, where there are no biases necessarily. There are biases, but you hopefully have a leader or a teacher or a principal or someone who can then interrupt those biases and say, hold on a second, that's how that person feels. This is how you feel. How do we come to the middle here? And I think especially now with the climate of our political system and everything else that's going on, it's super, super important. So I really just want to create an army of kids that just think above themselves and really just want to do better for the world. But also to be really good readers and writers and mathematicians, because you can't do any of those things unless you have those skills as well. So it's a big, lofty goal.
I've been, one of my intentions for the new year was to say, hey, at least once a month, I got to find somebody that totally disagrees with me on something.
That's a good idea. That's why I watch Fox News.
and to ask the question and start with, help me understand what this is and help me understand your viewpoint on this, right? Like, mm-hmm. and to really reach out. It's hard because we get so siloed. It's easy to lean into, hey, I kind of believe that, teach me more, right? Yeah. Like that's, I think, the social justice mission of a lot of white folks is like, hey, I'm on board, teach me more, or hey, help me learn here. But to turn around and say, why aren't you on board? Help me understand that, right? And so that's a hard mission. And so I'm kind of holding myself and, you know, I heard the president challenge us to do that again at the inauguration, but like really to say like, hey man, you know, I'm a guy that, you know, I wish we wouldn't have capital punishment in this country. I need to go talk to some group that says we really should still do that. And I want to listen, like really listen. I don't have to agree, but like, I need to put myself in a place where I'm asking the other side of something I don't agree with to really try to convince me and yeah. try to help me to grow. I don't know. I think it's a challenge. And I think something at every level, K to 12, we can do that at an age appropriate way.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think that question you just asked, tell me more. Like, I think like if I could, you go into a classroom of kids, just to say third graders, and someone says something off the wall, and another third grader could say to them, tell me more. Because you're coming at it from a space of wanting to learn from that person and not being emotional about what they said. And I think, again, that comes back to the idea of just being self-aware of who you are, because you're confident in who you are. And that to me is, if I can, again, I've said it 100 times already, but if those kids can leave my school being self-confident in who they are, then I think they can attack any sort of, you know, personal community-based problem, you know? Again, they need to learn how to read and write and all those sort of things. I get that 100%. But if they can leave confident people in who they are, then I feel like my mission is done. As far as, you know, leading the school of students. So
let me ask you a couple more questions and we'll get out of here. And where and who are you learning from, or what are you reading these days? Podcasts listening to? How are you learning these days?
All right, so. You know, it's funny. You said you want to get the other side. I've been an active member in Parler. I'm going to say that out loud for a while. And I learned some things. I don't know that I retained all of the stuff, but I definitely learned some things. So if you say podcast, I do a lot of, you know, Code Switch, the Code Switch podcast. I do a lot of listening. I try to walk and work out as much as possible. So Code Switch on NPR is definitely one of the ones that I definitely listen to a lot. And there's a lot of just some random things that come up. What was the other one? The People's Party with Talib Kweli. He is a producer. He is far left with his ideas. I don't know that I believe and agree with everything he says, but he says some things that are just crazy out there. Street Politicians with my son and Tiffany, or Tamika Mallory, is really, really good as far as social justice, because she really brings a serious voice to what's going on. I definitely always catch up on the news every day with some things that are going on. Brene Brown, his new Dare to Lead podcast, and Unlocking Us with Brene Brown is really, really good. And then I do some fun things like WTF with Mark Maron. He's a comedian. He interviews some interesting people from here and there. So those are probably the ones. Oh, Sheldon Aikens has a Leading Equity podcast, which is really, really good. And then I do also try to get into like the Tim Ferriss Hidden Thinkers podcast. Those like, how do you hack life sort of things. I probably do like 12 hours of podcast listening a week. It's a little out of control. Yeah. As far as books are concerned, just recently I've ordered some books to learn more about our indigenous people and like the local land, like we're in Lenape Land in Delaware, and learning more about what was going on with the local indigenous in this area. So I just got that tonight. I ordered a book, the autobiography, I think it was the Journal of Cassius Clay, who was a white abolitionist who actually, Cassius Clay, who became Muhammad Ali, was named after him. Who knew Muhammad Ali was named after a white man, which would be an interesting trivia question. So just learning about those sort of people, you know, this past weekend, I did a really deep dive into Bacon's Rebellion and how that was really the start of the, you know, after and during that, you know, the terms white and black weren't even things. They didn't appear in print until 1606. So why what was the purpose for that? You know, why did they try to separate poor whites from black people? Like, what was the purpose of that? Why did the people of power try to do those sort of things? So those are the things that's trying to just unravel history and why we are where we are now. Why, you know, again, these things that happen in time, like, again, the pandemic, I got a George Floyd, the insurgency, those are the three big ones for me right now. Like, why? We got here for a reason. And what is it? And I really enjoy just trying to unravel that thing. And then also I'm reading the book TWA 800 about it was a conspiracy during the Bill Clinton years where a plane was shot out of the air with a missile, supposedly. And they had like thousands of eyewitnesses and they're like, oh, nope, it was an accident. I'm like, okay. So I'm not quite through that book, but just a little bit of everything. But
that's good.
Again, that book was written from a very like, right-leaning conspiracy theory, you know, author. So
yeah, I kind of remember that TWA Flight 800 kind of thing. I don't know why, but yeah, that's a good list. So my readers always get my readers always leave with a list. I like that. So all the listeners know that I finished reading Eberhardt. I'm not gonna remember that name of that book, but Jennifer Eberhardt's book, which was really good.
Okay.
Uh-huh. She's a psychologist at Stanford that does a bunch of stuff about black bias, which was fascinating, like the research around those sort of things. And so I've been taking my reading to a little bit of a different level. It's been good. And then I'm listening to Isabel Wilkerson's Cast.
Okay.
Which really couches her first book is a beautifully written ode to all of the big migration that happened out of the South to the North during Reconstruction. Anyway, so that book, it took me about a year and a half. Like I was like one, barely 10 pages at a time, but Cast really like shines this light on racial injustice, but as with the language of the Indian caste system overlaid, right? Wow. So it's like, hey, people don't want to talk about race. How about if we just talk about us having a caste system in the United States? And I was like, oh, okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so certainly not through that, but I'm also the Secret Life of Groceries. I just read about this guy wrote a book about like supply chain of the grocery stores and Whole Foods and Trader Joe's.
That would be interesting.
It was super interesting.
Yeah.
So I'm all over the place too. So that's good. are you rooting for anybody in the Super Bowl?
Please. I'm an Eagles fan. I can't. I mean, Andy Reid. I like Andy Reid. I hate Tom Brady with a vengeance. I cannot stand that man. I'm glad that we beat him in the Super Bowl.
I know where I was for that Super Bowl. How about that? I remember very vividly where that was. Yeah. I'm sure you do more than I do, but I was in Austin, Texas for that. So,
you're in Texas for the Eagles winning the Super Bowl? That's horrible.
No, it was.
I root for Kansas City.
Near Philly when stuff like that's going down. So.
I root for Kansas City. I like some of the players. Mahomes is cool. You know, I kid about Andy Reid, but you know, he was a former Eagles coach. I'll root for Andy Reid.
Fair enough. And Travis Kelce's first ballot Hall of Famer.
That's
man.
True. I do. Like, and his brother Jason plays for the Eagles, so that's another connection. There you're you definitely go. Kansas City Chiefs.
Whatever
fan,
you
right?
need to make it feel better, man. Whatever you need to make it feel better. And then finally, what are you listening to?
Oh gosh!
What's the first thing you're? What do you listen to? What gets you going?
I have a playlist on Spotify that I listen to quite frequently. It's called the best playlist ever I created myself. What am I listening to? You know, it's funny. I'm looking at my. I'll just pull the last. So I'm burning all the CDs that I've had forever because I used to DJ in college, and I'm looking at. So I'll just pull the top five that I have right here. It's Beastie Boys, The Five Boroughs. Oh, there's no camera, so it doesn't matter.
It's all good.
OAR, the Wanderer, the Guns N' Roses Greatest Hits, DJ K Slay, which is like a underground DJ, and then Tupac, Are You Still Down? Remember Me. So
that's a great five right there. I like
there it.
It
is. Those are the five.
I'm all over the place too. Like I was telling someone the other day that I was listening to bluegrass, then it went over to listen to Run the Jewels. So like it was in the same playlist. So I was like, people are like, is this yours?
Killer Mike is a genius.
Yeah.
He is really, I mean, one of the most interesting guys. Anytime he's interviewed anywhere, I always try to catch that.
Right, so I'll give you one more thing. The Broken Record Podcast, Rick Rubin, the producer.
Okay. I haven't heard of that.
Sits down with a number of people, but he sits down with Run the Jewels, and he had Pharrell recently, and then Daryl McDaniel from Run DMC was on there, but Chris Stapleton on. So it's all over the place. So.
I love listening to musicians talk. It doesn't matter what genre either. It can be a country singer that's a female to the deepest, darkest rap artist. I mean, they all have interesting ideas, thoughts, and stories about whatever. Because I've always wanted to be a musician, and I'm horrible at all things music. That's why I listen.
That's one of my biggest regret, right? And my biggest regret is I didn't learn how to play an instrument yet.
Yes, you got it. And you got killed the whack.
So, one last thing. What will get you through the rest of the week? What keeps you going? What keeps you energized? What's one story we can leave on?
We're going to make it. I mean, I know it sounds simple and silly, but I mean, we're going to make it. I realize after today, I mean, we had our ups and downs, but work. I mean, the staff that I have now are committed to, no matter how bad it is, putting that smile on for kids and being there. And right now, showing up, I think, is so important. Just being there for those kids and allowing them the space right now. I hope that we've done enough work with our staff, and I'm responsible for this. I understand that, but I hope I've done enough work in helping them that we're prepared and ready, not only as the building is concerned, but emotionally and through the SEL lens. Like, have we checked in enough? Are we in a space mentally that we can deal with kids and all the stuff that they're going to bring to school? I think we are. I hope we are. It seems like in the first 2 days, although we have had some issues, people have rebounded and kids have left happy. And parents, when I do the drop-off line, because I do the drop-off and pickup line for the car riders, and there's 87 out of 185 car riders right now because I don't want to put the kids on the bus, which I understand. I get it. But parents are super appreciative, like none other. Mr. Tim, thank you so much. I'm like, I've never gotten so many thank yous. I'm like, all I did was welcome to the car, but you're welcome. I'll take it right now, because for a long time, it wasn't that I didn't get the thank yous. And it's hard after a while, but hey, it's been great.
Thanks for showing up. Thanks for taking care of your
Thanks team. For having me.
Stay healthy, man. We need you out there doing the good work.
Yeah, it was fun, but I appreciate it. It was like a really great conversation. Thank you, sir.
All right, we'll talk soon.
That will do it for this episode. Thanks for listening to the Help Me Understand podcast. For more about my work as a school designer, visit me at drrobertdillon.com. And one final thing, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast on whichever platform you listen. Those reviews help others to find the podcast that you enjoy. Until next time, stay safe and be kind. We'll be right back.